Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to an unfeasibly special 118th edition of the Bugle, a World Cup special Bugle. It doesn't get much more special than that, John. Sport, 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 sport. I'm Andy Zaltzman in London, veteran of watching seven previous World Cups, so you're in very safe, experienced hands. And what more appropriate place for me to be Bugle casting this special World Cup special Bugle to you than London, which is in the world where the World Cup is taking place.
No one's denying that.
And there are many cups in London too, so right on the spot. Joining me from a country that reached the semi-final back in 1930, but has done pretty much sweet Faustino Asprilla since then, it's John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Listen, Andy, I think you can probably people can tell the excitement in our voices. Yeah. There's no better time in the world than this, World Cup time, no. Andy. How exciting is this?
Yeah, before the inevitable disappointments how events turn out and the general tone of play and refereeing.
That will come, Andy. And don't, believe me, I've been trying to explain to my girlfriend that, you know, with this, it becomes a bipolar time of year for me. This is the first time she's experienced a World Cup with me.
Yeah.
So she will see the highs and the lows of John Oliver's emotional personality. The highs will be high, Andy, but the lows, sadly, will be low. And in fact, as we speak now, I'm technically going to be in South Africa at the time this bugle goes out, Andy. This will be the first World Cup that I will ever have attended.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something of a dream come true. And it's also one of the most dangerous countries in the world. So that's going to give it an extra bit of spice.
Yeah.
Now, I just wanted to wait until the extra thrill of self-preservation was involved in a World Cup too, Andy. Otherwise, it just didn't seem quite worth it.
So you're going to be in, are you going to be in Johannesburg or in
Johannesburg, Rustenburg? Yeah. Right. Johannesburg the whole time, and then we'll, on the 12th, we'll drive to Rustenburg for the game.
Right.
And then back to Johannesburg. Of course, where your granny is.
Yeah.
As well.
Do pop in.
I'll be as close to your granny as I've ever been.
She's a big fan of your work.
I think we both know that's not true.
So, yes, this is Bugle 118 World Cup special. 118, of course, John, the number of minutes that had gone in the England-Belgium game in 1990 when a 15-year-old Andy Zaltzman, watching England struggle towards a 0-0 draw against Belgium, was heard muttering to himself, I can't believe we're going to lose in a penalty shootout to Belgium. Belgium, of all places. And then a few seconds later, after Paul Gazza Gascoigne chipped a last-ditch free kick into the box for David Platt to hook an incredible volley back across the goalkeeper into the far corner of the net, that same 15-year-old Andy Zaltzman was leaping about like an electrocuted kangaroo on a hot rail track across his living room, shouting, yes, yes, f***ing yes, in front of his two surprised parents and two largely ambivalent dogs. Would life ever get better than that, John? Well, yes, it would, when Johnny Wilkinson kicked the winning drop goal in the World Cup final rugby of 2003, and when Geraint Jones caught Kasparovic out to win the Edgbaston Test of 2005 by 2 runs, setting up England's historic Glorious Ashes triumph later that summer. But those are the only 2 moments in my life that have got better than that.
Yep.
Apart, of course, from when my 2 kids were born. And when I got married. And when I got married. Actually scratched that. There wasn't the same will-they-won't-they tension in that one. Bookies had it odds on that she was going to say yes. Odds on. 6-4, odds on.
You say that, Andy. I just honestly take an emotional cover bit out on that one, just so we're all covered.
So, as always, even in this World Cup special, this section is going straight in the bin. This week, an audio World Cup wall chart, because you've got to have a wall chart for a World Cup.
Got to have a wall chart.
And this is the sneak preview of the semi-final lineup from the World Cup wall chart. The winner of match 57 will play the winner of match 58. And in the other half of the draw, the winner of match 59 will play the winner of match 60. Makes it all seem so much more real.
Top story this week, England versus the USA. Oh, it's on, Andy. It's on like Donkey Kong. The old rivals, the student and the teacher, the father figure and the rebellious son, the old world versus the new world, good versus pure evil.
What a game! The priest against the chorister.
What a game. Tomorrow, June the 12th, we'll finally decide who is the better nation between the two, who has the better citizens, and who will become the legal territory of who for the next 4 years. There's a nice little subtext to it, adding a little spice. And many thanks to David Cameron and Obama for just injecting that extra amount there. It's the only way Americans are going to care about this game, man. It's the only way.
Do they not care, John? I mean, how big is the World Cup stateside?
Well, I think they're going to care until the US get knocked out. And I think they're definitely going to care for the England-USA game. It's on ABC, it's on network television as well as ESPN here. And I think it's going to be a big deal. You know, we've done our part on the Daily Show. My boss is a huge football fan. And, yeah. You know, we've been trying to really get people involved. I don't know if Daily Show viewers are natural soccer fans.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're trying our best. We've even recorded three possible chats for next Monday, because I won't be there. I'll still be in South Africa, based on the three results. And I've got to say that even when doing them, I was getting really excited during the win. I was absolutely devastated. I'm not an actor, Andy.
But well,
and in many ways, neither is
your
my
Wikipedia
boss.
Entry will dispute that.
I don't think either me or John Stewart are particularly great actors. And yet, no, we were both very easily able to channel very deep, profound emotions necessary. Just shows how deep this runs. For me, Andy, I guess this is the thing. The stakes simply could not be higher. If England lose, I just don't see how I'm going to be able to go back to my office. It would be hell. My boss will make my life a living misery. The entire studio crew will be waiting to start a period of round-the-clock laughter into my face for the next 6 months. They've organised it. They're going to be sleeping in shifts to ensure no break or interruption. Because of the Daily Show, I've done the worst possible thing and spent a couple of days at the US training camp talking to the players, many of whom now I really genuinely like.
Right.
Jonathan Spector is an incredibly nice guy.
I see you've made a real mistake.
It's terrible. Stuart Holden's also great, and you know, everyone I spoke to was friendly, with no ego, more than willing to put up with my shit.
Yeah, that's what they want you to think, John.
I know.
That's how they weaken you in a war.
Oh, that's... this is exactly what I need to hear, Andy.
It's classic wartime tactics, John.
This is not... Because I just feel like it's taken a bit of edge away from the game for me. It's taken a bit of my edge away. And, of course, that should all disappear when I'm in Rustenburg. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm there and I'm thinking about the personal consequences I will suffer should England lose. I need to psych myself up for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the key when you're watching a game like that. You've got to be 110% mentally ready to watch it.
I mean, I don't want to get carried away here, Andy. But let's make sure we keep this in perspective. It's sport. But you know, were England to win this game, it would be a fitting answer to both the Boston Tea Party and the War of Independence.
That's right.
No more, but certainly no less.
Well, of course, I mean, it's the latest in a series of classic Anglo-America confrontations dating back to the... score draw between Johnny Smith and Pocahontas. Pocahontas, I'll do no such thing. I'm a gentleman and she's young enough to be my daughter. Via, as you say, the War of Independence. Let's call that one a draw with hindsight. I mean, sure, we got booted out a bit, but they had to take our language, political system and place names with the odd tweak, so we basically won.
It was a draw.
Yep. Back in 1950, last time England and America met in a World Cup, well, you don't need me to tell you what the result was. Unless you don't know, in which case you still don't need me to tell you. You might want me to tell you, but you'll probably be able to piece your lives back together eventually from the temporary despair of me not telling you, but I will tell you, so calm down. America f***ing won, as the headline in the sports page of the Time said at the time.
Yeah.
1-0, England with legends of the game such as Stanley Matthews and the team went down 1-0 to a winning goal scored by a lad called Joe Gatchens. Joe who, you may well ask? Well, exactly. England are back in the World Cup this year. But where is Joe Gatchens now, John?
Yeah.
Well, he died in suspicious circumstances in the 1960s. That's where he is. So, I mean, it's a slightly irrelevant point. But basically...
How did that happen, Andy?
Well, I don't know. No one really knows, because England were pretty strong then.
And Stanley Matthews.
It was basically viewed as the biggest national humiliation since the Romans tricked everyone into painting themselves blue. It was that bad. I mean, you've seen the American squad close up, John. I mean, they must be absolutely shitting themselves.
Well, they're not. They were also playing mind games with the Andes, pointing out, well, all the pressure's on England, isn't it? You know, no one expects us to win.
But we've got Matthew Upson in our squad, John.
We have the fearsome Matthew Upson.
Yep.
You're right. And, God, it's like... I mean, he's a Trojan horse, that guy. He has a lot of Greeks inside him.
Yeah. Really? Well, that is exciting news. England controversially left out the young Arsenal speedster Theo Walcott from their squad. despite him having played really well in a game nearly 2 years ago.
Yeah. When was that not enough?
After much speculation over how manager Fabio Capello, whose name in Italian translates as the Randy Pomegranate, would break the news of the players, it transpired that he did show by means of a game of charades, turns out. Yeah. So, and in this in Walcott's case, it went, right, three words. It's a film? No, a book? A managerial decision. Right, third word, one syllable, sounds like flashed? No, exploded? No. Popped. Oh, sounds like popped. Oh, is it dropped? Yeah, yes, I got it. Dropped. Oh. So that's how it... Because it's always difficult. You know, you've got to lighten the tension of a situation like that, John. So
he's such an interesting man.
That's
manager.
How he did it, yeah.
I mean, how is the notoriously balanced British tabloid press dealing with this upcoming game, Andy? Because usually they find some way to inject xenophobia, casual racism and jingoistic historical references into any game that England play. You know, has the back page of The Sun had Wayne Rooney using Abraham Lincoln's head as a coffee table or Frank Lampard using the corpse of Betsy Ross as a draft excluder?
Well, I think so, John. I mean, I don't read the tabloids, but I think it's safe to assume that either they have been doing that or they've been thinking about it, which is basically the same.
Right.
So, big stuff. Big
English
stuff.
People really care about football. I guess that's what... I mean, lots of these lots of the buglers are maybe not going to understand too much about football. Later on, we'll talk about some of the great moments in the World Cup that you can look up on YouTube. It won't let you down. David Platt's goal would be a good example, Andy. You type in David Platt and Belgium, you'll see an absolutely fantastic goal, and you can see that and imagine at that very second Andy Zaltzman saying, "F*** yeah," in front of his shocked parents, and me in Bedford just bouncing. I just couldn't stop bouncing around the room, just jumping, constantly jumping. Or there was too much joy in my system.
Yeah. And too many trampolines in your living room.
But, you know, Americans do care about their version of football as well. A US man, famously last year, offered a testicle for tickets to the Super Bowl. Put an advert on Craigslist that said, well-travelled, well-maintained, larger-than-average left testicle that's been in use for 22 years. So I don't know if he got those tickets or if he still has that testicle. But you know, you just want Americans to care that much about real football as well. It's a gift, the world. You don't even need to care all year round. Obviously, you should, but you don't need to. But come on, it's the World Cup. You're the only nation on earth that doesn't think this is the most important thing in their lives at the moment.
Now time for the first in the Bugle Classic World Cup commentaries. And the BBC have very generously let us delve into their archives. And this one comes from the 1954 World Cup final between Germany and Hungary. And here we hear BBC commentator Drolsten Crandling.
It's Germany 2, Hungary 2, with 6 minutes remaining. Here come the Germans. The ball falls to Rahm. He shoots. Oh, it's gone in! Shit it! The f***ing Crabs are going to win the World f***ing Cup! Ball sacks! I lost half a f***ing leg in the war thanks to these guys! How much are these cheating f***ers paying the ref? Well, if there's ever been a more obvious miscarriage of justice, I haven't f***ing seen it. Shit, bad McGonagalls, I'm out of here.
And this classic commentary comes from 1986. Mexico quarter-final, England against Argentina. Diego Maradona, minutes after punching the ball into the net with one of the most impressive pieces of volleyball ever seen on a football pitch, picked up the ball just inside his own half with the whole of the England team lined up in front of him. Here's ITV's man on the mic at the time, Pernell Hinge. Maradona gets the ball now, the cheating little shit. What are you going to do? Punch it in from the halfway line, you prick. He turns now. Kick the f***er! Past Beardsley. Whack him, you loser! Past Hodge. What part of kick that bastard of the balls are you struggling to understand, Hodge? Past Reed. Nail him! F***ing nail him! He's up to Fennec now. Come on, Terry, put him in a body bag! F***ing shit, he's past f***ing Butcher as well. F***ing twat him, Terry. Just Shilton to beat now. Take his f***ing head off, Peter. I don't give a f*** if he scores. F***ing ruin him. Oh, bollocks, it's in. Oh, no, it's in. 2-0. Oh, that was a tremendous goal by the little magician, Laurie McMenemy. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Oh, my God. I'm crying. Oh, my God.
Is that actually you say you're crying? I remember that's the first time I think I cried at sport when England lost that. I remember I was 11 years old and wept salt tears when England went out because Lineker missed that. f***ing open goal header at the end. She's only still got a career in television, is that right? Is that right?
Hooligan news now. Well, Andy, one of the marquee matches of the entire tournament may well be the English hooligans against the South African police force. That's the one that you won't find on a wall chart, and that I don't think enough people are talking about. It's a tough result to call this, Andy.
The bookies have got it, I think, 4-5 on both sides.
Well, that's it. It's even money, I think. Obviously, the English hooligans have their trademark pace, power and total lack of self-respect in their favour. You know, they've got that. But the South African police, Andy, don't underestimate them. They've got steely discipline, combined with no real concern for procedural etiquette. It could be all-out attack from both sides. Definitely one for the neutral to watch and enjoy.
Bugle World Cup quiz now. And, John, it's 80 years since the first World Cup. Who can forget it? Well, not many people can forget it anymore, since most of the people who were there at the time are dead. The ones that are left are pretty old and therefore likely to be suffering from memory loss.
Don't follow this train of thought, Andy. It's a joyful occasion, this. Don't make it miserable.
So to mark this seemingly inevitable 80th anniversary, here is the official Bugle inaugural 1930 World Cup multiple choice prize quiz. Question one. Alex Villaplan captained France in their first ever World Cup match, but why is he not regarded as the national hero he might have expected to be? Now, I should say, all these questions do have one factually correct answer, but I made it more difficult for you by camouflaging the fact with some bullshit. Right, so is it A, because he scored an own goal as France were eliminated by Argentina, then blamed all of his teammates for the own goal by claiming they'd hypnotised him at half-time and made him kick the ball the wrong way as part of a match-fixing scam? Uh-huh. Was it B, because when swapping shirts with Mexican Juan Carreño after that first World Cup match, it turned out that he had a tattoo on his back of the Duke of Wellington strangling Napoleon? Villaplan tried to explain the tattoo away as, quotes, a teenage prank, but the French press gave him hell, especially because, as Figaro newspaper said, Napoleon looked like he was wearing lipstick, hold-ups and artificial breasts. Was it C, because he ended up being executed by firing squad in 1944 after collaborating with the Nazis and perpetrating some quite horrific acts of wartime brutality? At a press conference after his execution, the footballer said, yeah, well, obviously it's disappointing to have been executed, but that's football, some decisions go against you. And obviously the court made the call and I've got to live with that, or not live with it, I guess. Obviously, I'm going to be missing a few games now after being shot dead, but I can take a lot of positives away from it. Hopefully, I can learn from the experience, learn from my mistakes, and try 110% not to collaborate with the Nazis or torture and murder anyone next time there's a war. Or was it D, because he once said in an interview that he hated garlic? The then French president, Gaston Doumergue, called for Villaplan to be dropped for life from the French team. He's not fit to call himself a Frenchman, said Doumergue, whilst riding a bike. So, A, B, C, or D?
A.
A, you're going with A?
Yes.
You're going with A, the own goal?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you the answers at the end. John's gone with A.
I'll go with A.
Question two. What was unusual about the winning Uruguayan team in the 1930 World Cup? A, they were the only World Cup winning team whose mascot was a live animal. The impressive beast, an ex-circus tiger called Stripey Joe, would lead the team out on a special leash and roar the Uruguayan national anthem whilst eyeballing the opposition. FIFA later outlawed the use of live mascots after the Italian rhinoceros Luigi charged onto the pitch in the 1938 final and part skewered the referee on his horn. Was it B, because they are the only World Cup winning team to have had only 21 arms in their starting 11? Forward Hector Castro had inadvertently lopped off one of his arms with an electric saw as a boy. During a game, possibly. Well, we don't know. All we do know that if it was during a game, it just shows why FIFA was right to prohibit players from taking electric saws out onto the pitch with them, which in turn explains why Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies never made it in professional football. Otherwise, he had all the attributes of an excellent attacking wingback. Was it because C, the Uruguayan's pre-tournament team bonding exercise, uniquely involved putting on a burlesque-style musical production of King Lear? It brought us together, said Captain Jose Nazazzi after the match. When you know your teammates are prepared to put on a revealing corset and belt out Cordelia, Let Me Feel You in front of a sceptical crowd of hardcore Shakespeare fans, you'll do anything for them. Or was it D, because they won the World Cup despite never having talked to each other? Manager Albert Supici believed conversation was a drain on energy and morale and forbade his players from talking when not on the pitch. A, B, C or D, John?
C!
C, you're going with C.
The King Lear one.
Okay, well, let's see. Finally, question three. What special feat did American centre-forward Bert Patenaude achieve in the USA's second group match of 1930? Was he A, the first world player to score a World Cup goal whilst on stilts? The American team lacked a big target man to try to head the ball in, so Patenaude took the field on 10-foot stilts with special 11-foot socks to trick the referee. After 35 minutes and several painful falls as he overbalanced whilst trying to nod the ball goalwards, including one where he fell onto the top of the goal, just as teammate Growl Scarlini in the third blasted one in, causing the ball to go over the now snapped crossbar instead of the net. He finally scored a historic stilted goal. Was it because, B, he was the first player to be sent off in a World Cup match, and the only one ever to be red carded for kidnapping the referee at gunpoint and demanding he give a free kick? Was it C, he did the first ever pre-organised goal celebration? Until then, goals had been marked with the old-fashioned curt handshake or a simple nod of the head, rather than today's choreographed mayhem. But after blasting the stakes into an early lead, Paternaud celebrated by miming, attempting to import something, but being unable to afford it. A clear expression of opposition to the recently passed Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which Paternaud thought, correctly as it transpired, would damage the American economy at a delicate time. Yeah. For his second goal, he celebrated by crawling on all fours like a dog and pretending to urinate on the corner flag. Or was it because D, he scored a hat-trick posthumously. Super effort for a dead player to bang in three crucial goals. Last thing to go for a striker, though, isn't it, John? The centre where the goal is. It's like a boxer's punch or a lady tennis player's grunt. So, axes. What's your answer for that last one?
B, and it is B.
You're going for B, the first man sent off. Yeah. So you've gone with... well, I mean, I'm afraid, John, you've got every single one wrong. Everyone else, axes down. Your time is up. The answer's now... Question one, it was C. Villaplan was executed for being a Nazi. If you think some of today's footballers behave badly, think again by comparison. Question B, it was question two, it was B. Hector Castro only had one arm. Didn't stop him blasting the fourth and conclusive goal in the final. And question three, D. Paternaud scored a posthumous hat-trick. Now, this is a fact of sorts, John, C, B and D. Paternaud, who played for, amongst others, the Fall River Marksmen, the Philadelphia German-Americans, those are real teams. Right. The Utah Eunuchs, that's not a real team. They got much stronger as a franchise when they stopped insisting on fielding only eunuchs. Even stronger when they stopped castrating all new non-eunuch players, but lost their identity as a result. And also played for the Orange County Testicles, whose kits involved for a revolutionary crotchless shorts, enabling the Testicles players to distract defenders whilst with their swaying nuts as they ran with the ball. The key, of course, as a defender was to see which way the nuts went, knowing that the player would then go the other way. That's basic physics, John. But easy to forget in the heat of contest when a man's crumpledougals are jangling in your face. And it also played for the Wisconsin Wang Twangers. Different meaning in those days. The Wang was a rough stringed instrument similar to a sitar, made out of a raccoon corpse, popular during the Depression when sitars were too expensive. But he was, anyway, that's a bit of background. Paternaud was only officially credited with FIFA for the second goal of his hat trick in 2006. Some 32 years after he went down in the box for the last time, I went down under the ground in a box shaped like a coffin. So to mark this newly awarded hat-trick, FIFA arranged for the closest living relatives of all Paternaud's teammates to charge over to his grave, slide on their knees and do a massive celebratory bundle on him. So that's basically correct. Posthumous hat-trick. So C, B and D, if you got two right, here are the prizes. Two right, get a signed photo of Brazilian legend Pelé. I mean, you will have to source it yourself and sign it yourself. But you do now have... In fact, you have official Bugle permission to ask Pelé for a signed photo. And if you've got all three rights, you have won the chance to be referee in the World Cup final on the 11th of July, subject to FIFA approval. We have asked them. Negotiations are at an early stage. We asked. They told us to f*** right off, and we're haggling from there. But if you pitch up to the final in Cape Town, talk your way in, I'm sure a sensible compromise can be worked out. That was the Bugle World Cup quiz.
Great World Cup moments now. Andy, lots of our listeners are American, many of whom may not really be aware of much of the history of football. And there are so many great World Cup moments. You almost envy people who don't really know anything about them yet. It's like someone telling you they've never listened to Bob Dylan or have seen a Woody Allen movie. You envy them being able to experience them for the first time. So here are some recommendations to look up on YouTube and realise what you've been missing.
Yep.
Look up Brazil 1970, and you'll see some of the finest examples of feet kicking balls that there has ever been in human history.
Yep.
Look up the goal celebration of Marco Tardelli in 1982, and you'll see a man totally and magnificently losing his shit. You can see on his face him thinking, holy f*** balls, I just scored a goal, and my body is not equipped to contain the joy I'm feeling right now. Either I run around dementedly screaming, or my head is going to physically explode. Look up the Argentina goal against Croatia in the last World Cup, a goal that Andy, you and I watched unfold together.
It was against Serbia, I think.
Was it against Serbia?
Yeah.
Okay, against Serbia in the last World Cup. which, and as we're watching, I don't think either of us could quite believe how good it was, Andy. We were on a hard deadline that day to get a radio script in, but opting to watch Argentina instead of meeting that deadline turned out to be one of the best decisions we've ever made.
Even if the series was cancelled.
Well, yeah, whatever. It's still, you can't, you wouldn't want to have not seen that goal happen live,
Andy.
That's right. Yeah. I think it's possibly my favourite goal of all time.
Yeah, that was a lovely goal.
And finally, look up the Maradona celebration after his goal against Greece in 1994. And you will see the clearest example of a man that needs to be escorted straight from the field so that he can comprehensively fail a drugs test.
I can add to that. From 1970... the Brazilian team, Jairzinho's goal against England. I think it's one of the most underrated of all World Cup goals for the build-up from Tostão and Pelé.
Phenomenal.
I mean, it's majestic, John. Majestic.
Phenomenal goal.
That's all I have to say on the matter. And Brazil in 82. Do you know, I still think I haven't quite got over the fact that they didn't win that tournament in terms of my psychological approach to life and realising that beauty could be destroyed.
I think there's a difference every year between the winners of the World Cup and the rightful winners of the World Cup. Last World Cup was definitely Argentina.
Yeah.
Definitely the rightful winners of that World Cup. Certainly more so than Italy. Anyway.
So, finally, Bugle forecast time. John, who is going to win the World Cup?
Spain, Andy.
Right.
If they don't win the World Cup, they will be the rightful winners of the World Cup.
I think North Korea for me. I think
no.
Andy, I know they're absolutely useless.
No. What you're answering? You're confusing that question with what team is most likely to defect.
I just think how many other teams are going to be playing under the probable threat of execution if they fail.
You're right.
It's got to focus the mind, John. I think my team, England's probably got more chance than your team, the USA.
Whoa, Andy, don't do that. Don't do that. Not even as a joke.
Do people have flags in the car windows in America?
No, they don't.
Because they're sprouting up here. I'm driving around with a flag in my car window with a picture of football, of a football on one side, and a picture of 80s Brazilian legend Socrates struggling a thoughtful 40-yard pass on the other. I want football to be the winner, John.
Yeah. Actually, do you know what they do have? That's the interesting thing. They do have flags in their cars here, but they have them all year round. Right. Towards Memorial Day, so it's really for the car. Yet the only time you will ever see a flag in a car, or really in a window in England, is because the World Cup's on.
I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm just saying, it's an interesting thing. You can almost tell what year it is by, I suppose, your European Championships. Every 2 years, you'll see England flags.
So enjoy the World Cup, Buglers. Thanks for listening, if you have listened to the special Bugle World Cup special. Do send your emails in for next week's proper, not exclusively World Cup-based Bugle to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk and follow the World Cup, follow everything that's not happening in the World Cup on the Bugle Twitter feed at Hello Buglers. John, enjoy South Africa as we record. There's a bit of a pre-record this one.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hope you have a terrific time in Johannesburg. Very much. Is it like a cross between Paris and Rome, only a slightly higher altitude?
Really, I've heard it is basically a cross between Detroit and Beirut.
Right, and, a steaming pile of horse manure. I guess, that's about, from my recollections of it as a kid, that's about it. Say hi to my gran as well.
I will, Andy, and I'll be back next week with some stories from South Africa.
Let's sincerely hope so. I mean, I can't rely on it, but statistically.
Right. Statistically, there's a chance I may not be, Andy. Yes. But listen, if this had to be the last thing I ever heard, last bugle I ever did, I'm glad that commentary of Maradona's goal was in it.
Great. Bye-bye, buglers.
Bye. World Cup. Come on, England.
Come on, football.